Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here. It's time to get grilled. P3, it's the original protein. And joining us now on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline, the color analyst from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, Doug Deacon. Deke, how are you today?
Oh, doing fine.
Deke, what were your key takeaways from the Browns and the Chiefs yesterday?
Well, I thought defensively in the second half, I thought they played much better football than, you know, kind of what we were hoping to expect all season long. With that said, I think, you know, you look at the first half, the field position was a big factor in regards to the Browns' drives. They started, you know, I think we were always backed up. And then for the Chiefs, they had good field position. Second half, things kind of flipped. All of a sudden, the number of plays and the time of possession was reversed, and the Browns had some success on offense. I think Johnny got a little adjustment period to playing in cold weather, had some trouble throwing, but I think everybody did yesterday. And, it's one of those you kind of wish it would have been at the beginning of the season, a game like that where, you know, you could build on it.
Doug, Johnny Manziel at his press conference put a lot of the onus and the loss almost solely on his shoulders because of his inability to make the throws when necessary. Outside looking in, what was your take on his performance? Very impressive with his legs, which we knew was his strong suit, but his inability to make the throws as quarterbacks need to in the National Football League.
Well, and I think, you know, we talked about the adjustment period. I mean, there was a time we had a timeout and one of the equipment guys went out or somebody and, you know, put a cape on him during the timeout. I'm thinking, whoa, you know, most quarterbacks don't do that. So, you know, it's one of those things where if you play down in Texas, you don't get that kind of weather. If you play up, you know, north, you're going to get it, and you got to get adjusted to it. And, you know, it's like the winds at the stadium here on the lakefront. You know, that's going to be an adjustment period in a cold day. And I thought overall, you know, he obviously, you know, did a lot with his legs. As far as the passing game, there was sometimes it looked like he was behind on the slants. The timing was a little bit off, but, you know, is it a case of the wind where, you know, the ball does move? You know, people don't realize it, but you get in that stadium, you know, you're throwing a 15-yard pass and a ball will move a yard or two left or right because of the wind, and that's just, you know, one of those things and the chemistry you got to get, which brings you another factor is, you know, his work with the receivers. You know, you go in, and you have good chemistry with Brian Hartline. You lose him, and there's not been anybody other than Barnage that has been there on a regular game-to-game basis.
Talking with Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Deke, Dante Whitner said after the game that the Browns have their quarterback for next season and beyond. Do you believe that is the case with Johnny Manziel?
Well, I think Johnny can determine that. If he wants to put the commitment in, I think, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that have intrigued, and I've the last couple weeks talked to the offense or the quarterbacks coach on the other teams, Carl Smith. He was intrigued by Johnny. And yesterday talking to Doug Peterson, who's the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs, although Andy Reid calls the play, and he's impressed with him. So I think when you get the evaluation of somebody that, you know, does that for a living and they say, you know, hey, this kid can play at this level, I think, you know, that gives you a pretty good seal of approval.
Doug, as you look at the offensive line, they've been kind of playing very good football and the Browns' ability to run. Yesterday, Johnny Manziel, Isaiah Crowell runs for 88 yards. Are they finally gelling together, or is it particularly maybe taking advantage of teams that don't have, you know, aren't playing at 100% across the front?
Well, maybe it's calling running plays a little more frequently too. I think, you know, that's one of the things that we've seen this year is, you know, we get down by 7 and all of a sudden we kind of abandon the run. And this group is, you know, they lost their line coach. They've kind of struggled with that part of it. But I think the commitment to the run, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, you can show, you know, you're not always going to get, you know, big gains or things like that. But if you keep hammering away, it helps your pass protection. And then when you got a mobile quarterback out there, and that's another threat, you know, that adds something to the equation too. But, I think, you know, overall, it probably was the lack of use of the running game that has been the biggest problem.
And when you look at this line, you've got, obviously, Alex Mack, the potential to opt out, Mitchell Schwartz coming up as a free agent at the end of this year. If you're the Browns, what decisions would you like to see made on this offensive line?
Well, I think they need to re-sign Mitchell Schwartz. You know, everybody thinks you can go out and get offensive tackles. Well, you know, Mitchell Schwartz is a better player than a lot of, you know, people give him credit for.
I agree.
And he's a guy that, you know, he He comes out there and goes to work every day. He's a smart football player. You know, Betonio's a guy that's obviously, you know, they miss. You know, Alex Mack, you know, it'd be great to, you know, find a way to get him to come back. You know, and Joe is, you know, getting up there in 9 years. You know, you got to wonder, you know, how much longer Joe wants to play. So with that said, you know, you drafted Cam Irving with the idea that he's going to be your insurance problem. And, you know, obviously he's a guy that needs to spend an off season in the weight room and get himself more prepared for the pro game, because, you know, he gets his shoulders turned too much and he loses the leverage battle because he gets too high. So, I mean, he has potential, but it's a long way from the college game to the pro game.
Doug, the Cleveland Browns have one final football game. It happens to be here at First Energy Stadium. It's going to be very special. And besides the conversation about Johnny Manziel's play, the one other conversation that I've been hearing is the effort that the team has been playing with underneath this coaching staff as we finalize, you know, a very subpar football season. You've played spoiler before. Do you think that spoiler conversation, especially for your rival, is creeping into this locker room and should be a message resounding by the time Sunday rolls around?
I'd like to think pride is going to creep into the locker room. If you're a professional and you go out there, you don't want to be embarrassed on TV, and, you know, you play because, you know, your name's on the back of your jersey and everybody knows it, and you just play like, you know, the other 15 games. You play as hard as you can, as long as you can, and, you know, if you fail, you know, at least you failed playing 100%. And, you know, sometimes you get to that last game and nobody wants to, you know, go into the off season nicked up. Well, if you think that you're going to play that way, where I'm going to play not to get hurt, that's when you're going to get hurt.
Doug, was there any result to you that was more surprising than the Steelers going to Baltimore, taking on Ryan Mallett in his first start with the Ravens and losing that game, and what was essentially a playoff game for them?
That was surprising, you know, because the Steelers, you know, they can dominate you on defense, and obviously they have the weapons on offense. And, you know, you look at the Ravens, you know, here's a team that, you know, they don't have their starting quarterback. They don't have their best receiver. They don't have their best pass rusher. And, you know, they beat the Steelers. You know, credit to them and to John Harbaugh for getting them out there and getting them ready to play. You know, and I thought our guys yesterday played hard. I thought they played very hard. I mean, they got a lot of penalties that kind of cost them early on. And, you know, you look at the yardage, you know, there was a 50-yard difference. And that really, you know, hurt them quite a bit.
Doug, when you look at this season on the whole, what do you think? Obviously, a lot of things go wrong, but what was the major thing that went wrong for this Browns team?
Well, I think in the beginning when Josh McCown got hurt, I mean, because, you know, he was obviously way ahead of the curve in regards to being a prepared quarterback to play in this offense with the exposure he had with it. With DeFilippo in the past, and then the ability to, you know, take Johnny under his arm and kind of, you know, try to teach him how to be a pro. And, you know, he takes a lot of pride in that. And, you know, it's unfortunate Josh got hurt in that game. And then, you know, you go to the defensive side, and the fact that, you know, they went out in the draft and they got Danny Shelton with the idea they were going to stop the run. Well, they never really did get the run stopped. And, you know, it's still a problem. I mean, yesterday, you know, you look at the average per rush, and, you know, that wasn't exactly Jamal Charles out there. You know, they struggled again. So it's one of those things where, you know, you try to build a team that's going to be, you know, good on defense and run the ball, and they've, you know, come up short for the most part, although we've seen spurts the last few weeks, on those aspects. But overall, the consistency level of it hasn't been there.
What do you think was the biggest problem with the defense this year?
Boy, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if, you know, our linebackers are run linebackers. I think they're more pass coverage linebackers. And so, you know, once you get the you know, them exposed in that aspect, that hurts your run defense. And then in the secondary, the injuries back there, you know, you just don't get the communication and chemistry that you need to have a secondary that's in sync.
Doug, we appreciate the time so much. Obviously, another rough one. Browns close, but no cigar against the Kansas City Chiefs. Looking forward to hearing you throughout the week. And then, of course, on the call this Sunday for the Browns finale at home against the Steelers.
Okay, guys.
All right. Thanks, Happy Doug. New Year. Thank you very much, Doug. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines again, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagur and Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
So two receivers left. Manziel, stretch handoff, right side. There goes Crowell around the corner. Five. He dives for the end zone. He's at the pylon. He's in. Touchdown for the Browns. Isaiah Crowell.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm, breaking down, of course, the Browns and the Chiefs. And it's time now on the show for us to hand out the game balls. So we will do that. Your offensive game ball.
My offensive game ball. I'm going to give my offensive game ball to... I would give my offensive game ball to Mitchell Schwartz because of his ability to just create run lanes for Crow as he did on the touchdown, you know, which you can obviously go to clevelandbrowns.com or the Browns mobile app to see Nathan and myself feature that play as we break it down very, very concisely. And I just thought he's a guy, as Doug Deacon just said, that deserves to be, if he wants to be, a Cleveland Brown for a very long time.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to give it to Crow. They're starting to feed him the football a little
bit.
That's
what I was going to go with originally, but I figured Mitchell's a better, you know,
helps
the Crow.
Mitchell did help the Crow, and some of the Crow's biggest runs were running behind Mitchell Schwartz in this game, and you look at it for the Crow in particular in this one. Isaiah Crowell went running outside of right tackle and the right end, so that's all Mitchell Schwartz. Seven carries, 58 yards, and the touchdown.
And one other thing that I want to point out is, as we are giving out game balls, it's something that I've noticed in watching the last three football games. Is it me, or are we a different offensive line with Austin Pastor in the lineup?
It seems like we're certainly a better running offensive line with Austin Pastor in the lineup.
That's kind of my point. That goes back to who we were supposed to be. And I just think that our concepts have been more creative because of his ability to pull around, to move, to be the mauler when we need to be the mauler, not just catching along the offensive line.
So seven carries behind Mitchell Schwartz, seven carries for 58 yards and the touchdown. Behind Austin Pastor yesterday, four carries for 28 yards. So they were able to average 7 yards a carry there. Yeah, he has been somebody that has helped. I'm going to give my game ball again, like I said, to Isaiah Crowell. It's nice to see him get the opportunity. You go
Man,
and you look at
get him downhill.
When you get him down, and I think his tracks are better, his patience is better.
He had the one that could have went for more yards, but he stumbled for about that 9-yard gain.
Yeah, and we could have broken it. But here's a guy, Isaiah Crowell. He's got 653 yards, four touchdowns on the season. But when you look at his 653 of those, he's had 145 in week 14, 88 the last week, so nearly 200. And, you know, the touchdowns aren't there from where they were in year number one for him, but he's already rushed for more yards than he did a season ago, up from 607 to 653. And I think he's got a good chance, you know, hopefully in week 17 to get himself over, you know, 700 yards, which he should do pretty easily. He's got 200 yards catching. I'd like to see him more involved in the passing game. They've thrown the ball to him 22 times. They've picked up 182 yards and a touchdown. He's caught 19 of them. I think he's an underrated pass catcher.
With a guy like Duke Johnson, though, out of the backfield, you can understand why he's got the 57 receptions that he has and the Crow's only got the 22.
Of course, and I wouldn't suggest it. I think Crow... Duke is more of your pass catching back, 57 catches, 500 yards on the season. I'm saying, I just think it gives you something so you're not so tendency specific with Crow on the ball in the game.
Yep.
All right, let's go. 216-578-0850. That's a phone call. We're going to get to you guys in just a second. We appreciate you checking in with us. But on the defensive side, game ball defensively for you.
Game ball defensively, I'm going to give it to Nate Orchard because of his ability to get to the passer, continue to work. And he's a guy that hasn't hit the rookie wall. He's kind of propelled himself through that rookie wall and is playing his best football. And the one thing that is still, even with missing Armonte Bryant yesterday as he was inactive and I don't think even made the trip, is that Nate Orchard was so effective, only played 56% of the defensive snaps, 30 plays, 30 of 54 plays for 56%, but yet has had the lone sack and an interception that him and Craig Robertson fought over and the awareness to turn and run with it because two guys had taken Craig Robertson to the ground.
So compared to last week, you had Dansby, Williams, Gibson, and Whitner all played 100%. Gaines played 94%. So your back four was pretty much the same the whole game. And we had the majority of the guys playing over 50% of the snaps. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 over 50%. So maybe they were listening to the show.
And maybe they were. And I just want to point it out again. Because we made a point of it, and the Kansas City Chiefs, a lot like the Seattle Seahawks, Frank Zombo, 100%, Peters, 100%, Parker, 100%, Johnson, 100%, Eric Berry, 100%, Dee Ford, 100%, and then Dontari Poe played a big guy, the equivalent to our Danny Shelton, played 87% of snaps, 57 of 68 snaps. Then they dropped Howard at 84, and then their biggest drop then is down to 46 snaps at 68%. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of 11 players on their defense played 68% of their snaps or more. And for us, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 played 63% of the snaps or more. So,
well, they had 7 who played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 who played 100% of the snaps. So you look at their
right.
defense, 9 of the 11 played 84%. For the Browns, you don't get there. So it still is the same thing, even though it was a little bit
and
better.
And as I said, they're a top 9 defense in the National Football League.
Yes, they are indeed. All right, my game ball, Nate Orchard as well. The interception, the sack, assisted Dez Bryant once again, who's been playing very well for this team all year long. And then I thought his tackle on the tight end screen to break through the blockers and get Travis Kelce to get the ball back for the Browns to have that last chance. Another big play for Nate Orchard. According to Pro Football Focus, he also had 3 run stops on the day. Number 1 on the Browns in that
special
game.
Teams game ball, Jordan Poyer. He had 3. I believe he had 3 special teams solo tackles, which are hard to come by, and could have actually gotten tackled for about a 4-yard gain, but continued to fight, step out of a leg tackle, and keep that body leaning as a runner to convert on the fake punt for us.
It's just the heart and the will to go ahead and get that. I thought it was certainly something very, very good to see. Jordan Poyer, I agree with you on special teams as well. Let's go to Mike in Hawaii now. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing? I was watching a game on the beach yesterday. I was the only Browns fan in this bar. It was a Coast Guard bar. But I tell you what, you saw Johnny Football yesterday. I mean, we've seen he could pass. I think what happened with him, it seemed like the cold and really it's the wind that's a problem, because Smith had a problem with that throwing too. He was throwing those quick slants. But I felt good enough right now that I consider this season a success, because I think the Browns don't have to go get another quarterback. And if they do, I'm not watching them again. I tell you what, if they get this Jared Goff, I've seen this kid so many times out here because I have the Pac-12 network out here. I mean, he's all right, but we got to get a playmaker. I mean, to me, Johnny is the playmaker on offense. He's a difference maker.
We need to get some weapons on the outside.
Right, exactly. Now, you know, we got the wishing of Josh Gordon, you know what I mean? Now, if that Treadwell kid runs a sub-4.3, then you might pick him high. But I don't think he's that fast, the kid. But if Joey Bosa's sitting there, you stick him on our defensive line, then you've got to double-team the guy. We don't have guys like that. And let's face it, Johnny's only played 8 games, and with a dysfunctional organization and no playmakers. Thank God for McCowan. I mean, he's really been a godsend for Johnny. So I think all things considered, if you're not going to make the playoffs, at least you found out some things. And I think we found out enough that you can build an offense around Johnny Football. Because I was with a bunch of Kansas City guys. They were scared to death every time he took off.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, and I think that you're right, when you mix that in a few times a game, I think it can be very, very effective. But he's got to be able to win from the pocket.
Yes.
And he's got to be able to be accurate throwing the football, delivering the football. And that is what we've seen some progress. We saw it against Pittsburgh. We saw it against the Niners. But we need to see more of it against some good teams in the last 2 weeks. When you look at it, frankly, the offensive production, not enough for Johnny Manziel.
Not enough. And I just think it's few and far between. And even if you look across the sideline, at the team we played yesterday, you've got Alex Smith rushed for what? He rushed. Hold on, we have it here.
He threw for $125.
Threw for $125.
Yeah.
And rushed for
50 or something like that.
Yeah, but I mean, my whole point is, It's few and far between for a quarterback in the National Football League to rush for 60 to 70 yards and throw for a buck 60 and win a football game. Because as you see, Russell Wilson, you know, gets his 30 to 50 yards on the ground and only runs when he has to, but throws for 300 plus yards or 250 plus for that matter very frequently.
Yeah.
So there's a happy medium. So, okay, Johnny wins on the ground but loses through the air.
Well, and here's the true stat that matters. This is what matters the most, right? It's scoring. It's scoring the football. And you look at Johnny Manziel in his career, the games that he's played, he got a full start against Cincinnati. He produced zero touchdowns. That was last year. All right, this year, basically played the full game against the Jets, one touchdown on offense for the Browns. Two touchdowns against Tennessee, he wins. Cincinnati, one touchdown, loss. Pittsburgh, one touchdown, loss. Led the offense to multiple touchdowns against San Francisco, three, I believe. They win that game. You had three touchdowns as well on offense against Tennessee. You win that game. Kansas City, again, one touchdown on offense. So he has not won a game when he has not produced multiple touchdowns on offense. And you go through the points in those games. Kansas City was 13. Seattle, what ended up being, what, 30 to 13?
Yes.
So that's two at 13 or below. Pittsburgh was 9. Cincinnati was 10, and the Jets were 10. So in five of his seven starts, he's been held to 13 or fewer points. They're 0-5 in those games. The games he's gotten into the 20s, the Browns are 2-0 in those games. He needs to consistently find a way to produce more offense than he has been producing thus far.
And herein lies kind of the point that I made earlier in the show when we talked about defense. Okay, if you know that that's who Johnny Manziel is and he continues to grow, as many callers have seen the positive in Johnny Manziel's play and the production that comes from his play. Okay, so say he starts to finish, say, one more touchdown per game, right? So you raise that average, but the key is on the other side of things, our defense has given up, and you've pointed out for the last 5 or 6 weeks, how many times have they given up 3+, 4+, 5 touchdowns in football games, right? Or 30+ points or 24+ points, okay? We have a quarterback that can't score, and we have a defense that can't stop anybody.
And well, then that's why you're where you got that's a lot exactly of L's when you're here.
Absolutely, and that's why small tweak. We are changes, massive changes, schemes and players and people and everything away from being where we want to be. And that's not just being average; that's winning football games and winning them consistently.
And the amazing thing is, you look at this game for Alex Smith. Somebody was asking me what his yak was, and I don't have it based. Broken out like that, but I can tell you, he completed only 3 passes on the day that went more than 10 yards in the air.
That's the way they play football, though.
That's how they play football. That just very dink
and two of them were touchdowns, correct?
The two touchdowns, Travis Kelce over the middle, and of course Jeremy Macklin, which I was right in the end zone for that. That was a great throw.
Great throw,
right between
great
Dansby.
Catch.
Yeah, great
and
diving catch.
And I thought, if I watch it again and I watch it in slow-mo, the coverage could have been better.
Could have or could not have?
Could have.
Well, it was a very small window, but he got it in there, and it was a great catch by Jeremy Macklin. We got lucky they stopped throwing the ball to Jeremy Macklin.
Right.
They didn't
even
throw it to him in the second half. I don't understand why, but that's the way that Andy Reid wanted to do it. All right, when we come back, we're going to hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
Third down and 5. Here's Smith back at the 30. Throws. Quick screen off on the right side. And the Browns stop it as it went to Kelce at the 35. And Kansas City's going to have to punt.
Well, they could have taken a team photo over there after he caught it.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We're going to hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. And then, of course, we want to hear from you, 216-578-0850. But let's go to the podium after yesterday's game against Kansas City.
Extremely proud of the group. You know, told them that afterwards. I think a lot of teams, you know, fall behind on the road to a team, you know, in a tough environment, to a team that's, you know, likely going to be in the playoffs. Down 17-3. Given our circumstances, very easily could have packed it in and just played out, you know, slept, walked through the second half and gone to the buses. But that's not who we are. That's why I'm, you know, as a staff, I told him just how proud we were of the effort, how we finished that game. You know, competitive. You know, the mental toughness, dealing with adversity, no quit, caring. You know, all those things that you know, I talked earlier this week about planting seeds for moving forward. I think that's, you know, that second half was an indication. You know, it's one of those, you look at the scoreboard, you lost. You know, but in some senses, you feel like you just ran out of time. You know, really a tale of two halves for us, but I thought we made some great adjustments at halftime, just circulating among the coaches. Players were very interactive. I thought we had a great plan going out and went out and executed it. Unfortunately, just couldn't make one more play at the end. I'll open it up.
It seemed like the second half, Johnny just ran a lot. That was your, the extent of your offense, mostly.
We'll take yards and points however we can get them. So they were dropping into some deeper zones and doing a good job. You know, we had hit some throws underneath, and I thought with the lead they started to soften their coverage some, and just like Alex Smith did to us, that he was able to do it to them.
What did you think of his effort overall,
Manziel? I mean, he battled. I mean, I just, the play that he made on the bootleg where the end didn't bite. And he had to turn when he turned, and that guy was in his face and delivered a strike to Gary for a huge first down. I mean, I just thought that was indicative. I mean, took a major shot, delivered a ball on the money. You know, he's a competitor. I mean, I think he, you know, there's a couple throws he'd want to have back, some reads that he missed. But, you know, obviously I have to evaluate the tape. But you could see the competitiveness, the fire in the kid, the wanting to get it done. But that. Overall, it, you know, took a step forward.
You were driving for the tying score, and Manziel had the way through the offensive line and caught the ball on the 1-8. Just talk about that play, how that kind of took the wind out of the sails, possibly. Forget it, because you guys drove down again.
Yeah, he was just trying to make a play. He was trapped, wanted to get rid of the ball. I don't know whether he thought Mitchell was, I don't know how you mistake Mitchell for an eligible receiver. But, no, he was just trying to make a play, trying to get rid of it.
What accounted for your defensive turnaround in the second half?
One, I think we tackled better. I know we missed some tackles in the first half. And then I thought we were pretty dialed in once we got to halftime, just kind of their plan and how they were playing us and just some of the, you know, I just heard the guys communicating some of the pre-snap information. I thought Jimmy did a good job of you know, the halftime adjustment stuff, putting our guys in a little bit better positions once we had a good sense of what their plan of attack was.
Mike, this is 2 weeks in a row with Johnny coming from a hostile environment, you know, his good defense, all that kind of stuff. Would you say that he's stringing together some pretty
encouraging things? He is, but you know, he'll be the first one to tell you. The bottom line is finding a way to get the W, but this is. You talk about on-the-job training. There's no substitute for this to come in here, and this will only just be a positive when you look back at, you know, a foundation and know that he came into Kansas City and wasn't fazed by the defense or the crowd. Went into Seattle, two teams that are you know, more than likely playoff teams, playing well at the end of the year, less than ideal weather. Not a lot of quarterbacks can say that, especially coming to these environments for the first time. Yeah, I'm not sure. I just heard the guys on the headset. The Gary was the first read. I don't know whether he was screened and didn't see him, or where he thought we were going to have a takeoff on the outside. I'm just not sure.
As head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine talking with the media after the loss. Again, more disappointment. You know, he was proud of the effort, good effort, but again, Browns now 30-17. In their last 20 swings at the plate on Sundays, Thursdays. I guess that's it, Sundays and Thursdays for the Cleveland Browns. So not good enough, obviously, and the Browns will hopefully try to do better than that the next time they take the field this Sunday against the Steelers. Some news right now from the Browns. They've made some news, some moves. They've waived running back Daryl Richardson, who was brought to the team, never was active. He's been released at running back. They've also cut Deontay Pop Saunders, who was arrested on Christmas Day along with Armani Bryant. He has been released from the practice squad. They've promoted linebacker Cam Johnson to the active roster from the practice squad, taking the spot of Richardson. So they do have an open spot on the practice squad if they want to bring somebody in for there. So the Browns making some moves. Not surprising. When you're a practice squad guy, you can't be getting arrested.
God, you got to be perfect. And you have to be trending upward at all times and draw no negative attention to yourself either on the field or off the field.
And unfortunately for Pop Saunders, that's not what he was able to do. And if you go back, you remember Pop Saunders was a guy who started at Florida, ran into trouble, ended up finishing his career at a small school, went undrafted, and that is the reason why. And so now he is, of course, released after the incident that they had going there with Armani Bryant on early on Christmas morning. No word yet on Armani Bryant and what that means for him and his future here with this team, or if he'll be able to play this Sunday after he was made inactive this past Sunday. He did not travel with the team to Kansas City. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Matt, I got to tell you, we were talking to Deke about it briefly, but I cannot believe that given what they have done and given the way they have fought back and what they've overcome, that the Pittsburgh Steelers would go into Baltimore and that they would lose to the Baltimore Ravens in Ryan Mallett's first start as a Baltimore Raven.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the same way the season started against the New England Patriots and everyone questioned the defense and the youth and the lack of, you know, pass rush and experience with the absence of Dick LeBeau there for the first time in a very long time. Those questions have now come on back towards the end of the year when they need to close. Because, as I've said time and time again, Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown can't go for 30-plus points and multiple touchdowns and extend plays, you know, down in, down out, and win. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers template, and they win a lot of football games that way. But there's going to be a team that's going to figure them out and cover up Brown and get Ben to the ground and you know, and affect him sometimes. And I thought the Baltimore Ravens did a great job with that yesterday. And that defense has to be able to make their plays on their side of the ball as well.
If you had told me that the Baltimore Ravens would have scored 20 points, if you would have also told me D'Angelo Williams would run 17 times for 100 yards and two touchdowns, and the Ravens only scored 20, that there was any way that the Steelers lost that game, I would have said, not in a billion years.
Wow, it's a long time.
That is a long time. Not in a billion years, and that's exactly what happened. Roethlisberger could not get them into the end zone. He threw two interceptions. They had a play at the end of the game on a 3rd and 15 where Martavis Bryant had gotten behind the defense, and he tripped, kind of got his feet tangled up with the Ravens corner and couldn't make the catch. Otherwise, I think they would have gone down, and they would have won the game.
And, like I said, it just goes to show that even the best of them, when one side of the football is not firing and able to make that play or make that stop or have that run or put together that drive or stop that drive, get the ball back to your offense and give you an opportunity, a la the New England Patriots, which is why Bill Belichick wanted to kick the ball off, based on your defense, get a three and out or maybe a first down, 5-play drive, they punt the ball back to Tom Brady. He's going to have it around his own 40.
Just need the field
goal
to win.
Just go get two first downs and have Gostkowski, a Pro Bowl kicker, kick a field goal, win a football game. If you don't have that, you can lose any week of the season.
And you look at it, that's the thing. The Rams go and beat Seattle. You've got, of course, that game. The Jets beat New England. You've got the Ravens being serious. I love these division games at the end of the year. I think it's great for football. It's great for the NFL. It makes things much more interesting because anything can happen, it seems like, in division games.
And now the Bills, you know, the word out of the Bills is they are literally that's why I asked Doug Deacon the question, you know, playing the role of spoiler. The Cleveland Browns can eliminate the Pittsburgh Steelers from the playoffs and go, ha, okay, if we're so bad, we just ruined your season in one football game. The Buffalo Bills want to do that very same thing next week to the Jets.
And on the flip side of it, Rex Ryan is in the position to eliminate the Jets from the playoffs.
Right.
massively intriguing matchup that one is going to be. A massively intriguing
Where's
matchup.
Where's it at? Is it in Buffalo?
I'm going to look that up right now. We'll see. We'll see right now. If it's in Buffalo, do you think they can do it? I mean, this Jets team, so good. All right, here's what we got. It is in Buffalo. The Jets are 3-point favorites in that one. So they are expected to go in there. And when the Steelers are 10-point favorites over the Browns will be double-digit underdogs 3 straight weeks. Now, they did cover last week against Kansas City.
They did.
Just goes to show you, and here's an interesting one. Oakland on the road at Kansas City this week is only a 7-point underdog. Oakland's been a better team than we have.
They have been a better team. They've got the pieces.
They've got the pieces. They've built around them, and they've got it. So those are the big, those are the intriguing games right there. Buffalo and New York. That is going to be a very interesting.
Is Seattle, Arizona, too?
It's really all that there is to be decided, but that it doesn't matter.
I know it doesn't matter, but I just meant.
No, the other game that really matters is Minnesota, Green Bay.
Yes.
And that is for the NFC North.
At Lambeau.
In Lambeau for the NFC North. Packers are only 3-point favorites over the Vikings. And by the way, the Vikings just absolutely demolished the Giants last night. And how about the Packers yesterday?
Ugh.
Ugh.
That all. Something's. You know what? The Green Bay Packers offense reminds me of the Ohio State offense. Something's been missing all year long.
But is it just as simple as not no Jordy Nelson? I mean, is it really just that simple?
I do think so, because there's the domino effect of everyone's role having to change. Because you take Randall Cobb, he goes from being a number two, he's now got to be your number one. Your number three has got to be now your number two. Okay. And so it's the domino effect, I think. And injuries along the offensive line, they were without Bakhtiari yesterday. They had 8 sacks against Aaron Rodgers, who predominantly gets rid of the football as fast as, you know, Tom Brady week in, week out.
Sure.
Extends the play very well, even with a good rush. And he was unable to do that because of how Lindsley got hurt. I don't know if he came back in that football game from what I saw. I watched a little bit of the first half. So just injuries along the offensive line. But, you know, they're passing the baton back and forth between play calling. It's now back to McCarthy and off of Clements. And
it's a disaster.
It is a disaster. The defense can't stop anybody.
It's an absolute disaster is what it is.
Yeah.
My goodness. My goodness. How about my guy, Allen Robinson, just for 1 second? Leading the NFL with 14 touchdowns. He's tied with Doug Baldwin for the league lead. Leading the NFL 14 touchdowns. And he is 6th in the NFL with 1,292 yards. The only people with more receiving yards this year, nobody's got more touchdowns. The only people with more receiving yards this year than Allen Robinson, Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham, and Brandon Marshall, who's having an amazing season with 1,376. He's also averaging 17.2 yards per catch, which is amongst like people that are actually, you know, playing 30 catches or more. Malcolm Floyd's at 18.7.
But he's been hurt.
Sammy Watkins is at 18.6 on 49 catches. And then you've got Dorial Green-Beckham. These are guys with 30. But of guys with more than 40 catches, it's just Watkins at 49 at 18.6. Robinson at 17.2. Same draft class. Dorial Green-Beckham, by the way, has come on pretty strong. 30 catches, 528 yards, 3 touchdowns, 17.6 a pop.
I like 17.6 yards a pop.
And Devontae Parker, who many people were so down on, Devontae Parker has started to get it going. He's really only played, call it, the last 5 weeks, and he's got 21 catches, 388 yards, 2 touchdowns, averaging 18.5 a catch for Devontae Parker.
Yep.
So he's come on pretty strongly as well. All right, we're going to take a break. Time for our final thoughts when we come back. Again, the Browns close, but no cigar. Not enough time, not enough points, not enough. Once again, kind of the story of the season for this Cleveland Browns team, not enough as they fall 17-13 to the Kansas City Chiefs. Gurren Wilhelm wrapping it up on CBD right after this.
He's got Duke Johnson in the backfield with him, and he's back to pass. Third down, getting a rush, got away, angles way out to the left, turns the corner at the 50, runs 45, he's to the 40, he's to the 35, he's to the 34, and that's a first down for Johnny Manziel. Allen Bailey brought him down. What a run by Manziel!
Welcome back to the Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm. Final thoughts here for this team, Matt. How do you come out of there? Once again, you competed. You were close, not good enough. How do you come back and even focus on this game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Do guys get into, you know, fans get into it, oh, man, we can, if we beat the Steelers, we can knock them out of the playoffs. Do players care about it like that? Are players even thinking about that?
Players do, and I think it's got to be worded properly by the coaches if it is used as a motivator. And for the fans to truly dig in and back the football team, they hope that this football team understands that this rivalry is not only special to the club, but it is special to the fans because yep. there will be a fair share. I'm maybe even 50-50 in terrible towels in First Energy Stadium, unfortunately. So the Cleveland Browns fans that will be at First Energy Stadium this Sunday are going to want a team to be proud of, a team that can fight, a team to root for, and potentially have an opportunity at the end of this football game to laugh in the face of all those wearing black and yellow and twirling that terrible towel, because they will pack that terrible towel up just as we'll pack up the dog pound, you know, for what, 7 months until we have an opportunity to do it again, because we will both be watching what will happen from, January 4th on through February as the Pittsburgh Steelers are not in the playoffs. So,
is something that we'll be like talked about, like, yo, we can, let's send these fools home.
Yeah, why not? You know, and that's the one thing that the shoulder that I always used to have on, or at the end of a season when I knew I was in the playoffs, you know, and another team tried to come in and punch you in the mouth. If we had already qualified, I was always every opportunity I had to point to the scoreboard when we were winning, I would point, you know, or every opportunity to let you know, hey, dude, make sure you tune in Fox or CBS, watch us in the playoffs. Every opportunity I had to talk that smack at the end of the year, it's because of all your hard work all offseason was paying off. You had reached a goal that you had set by your team of either winning the division or qualifying for a wild card. Because as we know, and why Washington, after their victory, is one of the hottest teams in the NFL, and people are painting out a scenario for them to make noise, and now people are talking down Seattle Kirk and talking Cousins. Up Washington because of Kirk Cousins. You've got Kansas City with, you know, their dink and dunk offense and getting Tom Bahley and Justin Houston healthy again. Now they're going to make a run because of 9 straight. So anything can happen in the tournament. And if we can keep the Steelers out, good for the Cleveland Browns.
Spoken like a Super Bowl champion who got into the tournament as a wild card and ran the table.
That's right.
And now has that big piece of jewelry. The Road Warriors. Yes, indeed, they were. All right, that'll do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Patton, as well as we'll kind of recap, hand out the grades for the Browns and the Chiefs. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys. For Matt Wilhelm, for Easy E, I'm Nathan Zagura, saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily.
Driven by Liberty Ford.